Hello and welcome to this audio tour of Canterbury Roman Museum. I'm Dan Simpson and I was poet in residence here. I've written a series of poems inspired by the artifacts you'll see here in the museum and Britain under the Romans. This tour will take you around the displays. It's in one continuous soundtrack, so you may need to pause this recording as you find the next object I'm referring to. I'll direct you to where you need to go for each poem. I hope you enjoy this poetic tour of the museum. Okay, on to the first poem, to be listened to as you descend the stairs into the museum proper. This is called Lares Viales, or Gods of the Road, a prayer offered up to keep us safe on our journey. Janus, hear my prayer, as I once again open my front door, creating a portal from the safety of my dwelling to the cruelty of the world. Gods of the roads, protect me. I turn my back on my comforts, my security and loves, watch over my body as it makes this journey. I take well-worn roads and familiar paths, out and away from my home. I will climb hills and cross rivers, traverse miles of this earth, journey into unknown places. The way may be dangerous, save me from harm. The way may be long, grant me strength to go on. The way may be hard, toughen my feet. The way may be unclear, give me clarity of sight. The way may be lonely, provide me with purpose. I offer you life-giving corn harvested by my hand, votives dedicated in your name, this wine poured on my home's threshold, a vow to always honour you. Accept my prayer. May I return unharmed and enriched back to my home to honour the gods. Hear me, Lares. Hear me, Vesta. Our second poem is about one of the museum's star attractions, the Iron Age helmet you'll see to the right in the first room you've entered. Make your way there now if you're not there already. This poem is A Soldier's Death. Death is half an inch and untold years away, a strip of metal coming between now and nothing. But in the end, it could not protect him or her, this woman buried inside a soldier's helmet. Perhaps when war came, as war inevitably does, she threw the helmet at him, an anger born of worry and sorrow. Perhaps she was the one who polished it on the morning he left, murmuring a prayer of protection, the glancing blow of words harmless on metal. Perhaps she removed it from his head to kiss him properly as he returned, unharmed, smiling, but quieter. Perhaps she playfully put the helmet on the head of her child, laughing at how it slipped down over his eyes, hoping he'd not grow into it. Perhaps it was put away and forgotten about, not needed, until it was once again. This helmet, made to save life, adapted to contain death, buried deep but still protecting the memory of one who loved a soldier and knew the lesson well. Death is unknown years and half an inch away. Behind you and to the left, next to the horse and soldier, is a display case. Inside are amulets and charms, including one in the shape of an obscene gesture, the title of our next poem. Obscene Gestures. Oi! Come back here! But with barely a backwards glance, he's gone, speeding down the road as if he's off to the most urgent thing to ever happen in the Empire. I bend my thumb between index and middle fingers, curl them to make a fist with a little tip poking out, and shake it at the man's back as he speeds away from me. A crude approximation of a man's parts for a crude approximation of a man. A useless gesture, but it makes me feel a little better at least. Who was that youngster who had run down a citizen, an old soldier no less, judging from the talk he wears? Veteran of our wars. What is this world coming to? Wherever he's going can't be that important. This isn't Rome, after all. But that kind of behaviour wouldn't be justified even in Rome, and the streets are far busier there. I help the old man up. He dusts himself off and, with a small smile, continues on his way. Looking right, you'll see a town map on the wall with some scaffolding beside it. Make your way over to it. As you look at this map, think about Canterbury as part of the huge Roman Empire, all connected with roads. And, of course, bridges, a highly advanced skill the Romans possessed. A five-part poem about bridges. 1. Physical. We must get from here to there, but this water runs between us and progress. Bring me that wood and I will show you a wonder, a way to bend the world to our will. We are masters of this domain. No river will stop us. Nature's forcefully flung weapons, no match for our ingenuity. Build me a bridge. 2. Empire. Build me a bridge, and I will show you an empire. An idea realized in support pole and path. Two places connected, people colliding, buildings established, communities founded. The world changed, by idea and application, brute force and discipline, helmets and spear tips gleaming in the sun. The glory of Rome. 3. Power and propaganda. The glory of Rome hangs from the bridge, a banner, rustling in the breeze, proclaiming all is well. The statue of the emperor gazes at you as you approach. His smile says, I am your lord. Thoughts of rebellion die in front of this display of power. Confronted by superior force, they are useless. Throw them away. 4. River offerings. Throw them away, having said your prayer. Watch where they land in the water. Hope for a good sign. The river has it now, your humble offerings cast away, the votive to your god, its sacred course set. We may bridge this territory, but it is a consecrated place, as is the whole world. Respect the gods who watch over you. Pray they won't abandon you. 5. Battles. Pray they won't abandon you, those you call your brothers in arms, in battle, as you face your enemy. On the other bank he stands, readying his weapons, preparing the charge. Hope it doesn't come down to this, the tactic of last resort, a desperate measure. But the commander's cry goes up. Tear down this bridge. Head through the doorway to your right, passing the Iron Age helmet. On your left is the food bar. The Romans, like us, sometimes ate on the go and got quickly prepared food to take home. The great leveller in society. Fast food. Hungry, are you? In a hurry? No worries, I'll be with you in just a moment. All right, what'll it be? Not a huge choice, I'm afraid, but that only means you get your food quicker, I suppose. I won't distract you, but whilst you're deciding, do you see that man over there? The jeweller? Yeah, I hear he's having an affair. Yeah, I know, with the tanner's wife, of all people. Now listen, I'm not one to gossip, but you hear all sorts of things here. I won't repeat them to you. My customer's privacy is, of course, private. Everyone passes through my door, don't they? We all need to eat. But some people do go on a bit more chat than chew. Besides, it's hard to follow conversation when you work as hard as I do, pouring the wine here, piling up fish there, clearing plates from him, bagging up oysters for her. It's all go, all the time. They don't call this Thermopylaeum the fastest food in town for nothing, you know. We'll see you well fed and on your way, no trouble. Have you decided what to eat yet? No? All right, I'll be back in a minute. No rush. In this room, behind you, is also the vegetable cellar. Head over there now, where we'll hear a poem written and read by Kate Fox, one of the local residents who took part in the project here.
Green Goddess. To open this invocation, I pray to you, Janus, revered Roman god of beginnings, for this year in the garden. Would it please plenteous Pomona, goddess of gardens and orchards, to watch over my own tiny crop? Let my fuchsias have a future, let my roses bloom in May. Keep lettuce, chard and tomatoes safe from ravenous gastropods. Keep my herbs redolently fragrant as back in Roman times. Rosemary, sage, lavender, marjoram, perfuming my garden with a heady haze. So I pray to you, Pomona, for a year of sun and rain. Let my hanging baskets bloom and cascade over. Let my violas and pansies play. In return, Pomona, I bring you the fruit of my labour for your favour. My crop I share with you and all the garden creatures. Let the resident birds and squirrels, passing butterflies and busy bees, bask in the summertime abundance. So I dedicate this prayer to you, Vesta, goddess of the home and hearth. May my green fingers continue, and my suburban garden be your shrine.
Turning to your left, make your way through the doorway to the room with the lady having her hair done. To your left is the games room. Make your way inside, noticing the mosaic floor under your feet. Here's another poem by one of our residency participants, David Walsh.
Hours pass, if only seconds. I barely notice the sweat across my brow. Locked so intently in my task, I do not see Orpheus. I see myself, the colours and shapes like a mirror. I do not feel the weight of the tools. They are my hands, my fingertips. This is my epitaph to the world, a piece of myself that will remain when the rest of me has long since departed. The art will linger on to inspire, like the words of Cicero, the theatre of the Flavians, the wall of Hadrian. My name will be forever enshrined in the tesserae, and I'm sure no one is going to notice the mistakes.
Take the other doorway out of the games room and into the Roman kitchen, where we return to the poems I've written for the museum and another prayer. You'll see some vessels and cups in a display case. A prayer to Bacchus. Janus, hear my prayer. You, god of many faces and roles, as Consevius, you have created new life, blessed my marriage with a beginning. Janus, you have opened a portal in time as my child sets out on his life's journey. Hear my prayer. Bacchus, see my child. You, god of the harvest and fertility, who have been kind to me already, now I ask more of you. For though you are god of bliss and pleasure, you, god of wine, have another face, that of bitterness and fury. Do not let my son inherit the weakness of his father. I am too often found sat, alone or in company, my wine cup constantly empty and full, a serpent lying in wait, coiled around my happiness, the poison ivy of cynicism creeping through my veins, my thyrsus in hand, wand turned to weapon, the raging bull of my anger, ready to charge. Bacchus, do not look on my son with this drunk darkness, but rather with smiles and red-faced delight. Do not tempt my child to the ruin I have suffered, but rather to understand you as a fickle god, the pleasures of your madness and ecstasy as transient, wine as occasional and brilliant as music or dance, a fleeting beauty, not a permanent scar. I honour you with this drinking vessel, adorned with vines and fig trees, your hopeful symbols of life and joy, given to my child, so he may always remember you. I leave wine in this bowl in dedication of you, freshly harvested corn for the eternal feast. Accept my sacrifices, Bacchus. Hear my prayer, Vesta, goddess of hearth and home. I seal my words with you, with the intensity of sacred fire. May the future of my son be not one of struggle and strife, but of harmony with Bacchus. Exit the kitchen straight ahead, back into the room with the hairdresser. To the right of her is a big display of fragments of townhouses. Go have a look. There's a tile with a dog's paw print, a very naughty Canis, and a signed roof tile too. This next poem is all about Roman graffiti, found everywhere in the empire. The Roman army advances, conquering lands from northern Britain to Asia, bringing civilization to the barbarians. Quintus advances, scraping words on freshly made tiles left out to dry, writing vulgar Latin. Attius is a fool. Turn around and head towards the glass display through the double doors. In this case are a few statues, including that of a Dea Nutrix. You're looking for the woman holding twins in her arms. She watches over me, solid stone, gentle-faced, steel behind her mild expression, resolution in her eyes. The all-mother figure, cradling civilization in her arms, these twin children of Rome, feeding and growing up fast. She's already seen it all. Innocent infancy to scrappy childhood, teenage rebellion to emerging adulthood, civilized maturity and glorious years, elder statesmen and women, the inevitable decline and fall. Though she may be damaged, her head broken off, body weathered by time, her protection is as eternal as the idea she nurtures. Civilization. Head right and into the room of glass cases. On your left is the tombstone of a six-year-old girl. An offshoot of the residency here saw me write poetry for the Carinia Museum in Cirencester, particularly about an ornamental cockerel found in a similar young girl's grave nearby. Carinium cockerel. Go, cockerel. I send you away from my household and into the next world with my child. She who was so fond of you in life, demanding to hold and play with you at every moment of the day, from her waking cry at first light to her softly breathing sleep at night. In some ways you are alive, animated by the craft of the bronze worker, his hands shaping the prideful curve of breast and wing, the definite fix of comb and wattle, the lively detail of eye and beak. But it was my child who, like some infant Pygmalion, breathed life into you through her love. And yet more than this, we all gave you spirit. In the hollow of your back you hold memories, household stories of a mother's love, everyday moments of a father's affection, sounds of siblings teasing and laughter, the clash and clatter of an entire household turning our villa inside out, trying to find you when lost. The dark shade of night sky lightens to deep blue after this profoundly long and severe night, and I remember that you are Mercury's creature, heralding the coming of the light with a cry of triumph, a message from the gods that a new day is here, that we mortals are not forgotten by the gods, hope rising as surely and slowly as the sun. Speak for me now, you who may speak freely with Mercury. Tell him of my child who can no longer see that light, nor feel the first touch of soul's warmth. Put my anguish into your crowing. Give voice to my grief where I cannot, so that the gods may know something of mortal suffering. Tell Apollo that his medicine does not always work, and that Mors has eager teeth to take one so young. Crow for her who can no longer cry, and charge Mercury to see her safe in her passage to the afterlife, where I may see her again one day, holding you, Cockerel, as I hold you now. Behind you is a freestanding case full of glass objects, and to the left of that, a display labelled Public Baths. In there are some Roman dice, the topic of our next poem. O Fortuna, be good to me tonight. Make my dice land the right way up and the wrong way for my enemies. Show me your beautiful many-sided face so I can honour each in turn. We're only here through luck, so you might as well continue to play the odds. Chance has brought you this far, my friends. Tonight, I throw bones, because someday that's all we'll be. So make use of the body whilst we have it. Drink, eat, gamble, all three ideally. Live, play that game we're all playing. But listen, you can't rely on the gods, especially one as fickle as Fortuna, so I'll take precautions for myself. These dice, my friends, are not ordinary dice. No cheap bone for me, solid, beautiful ivory. Who wouldn't want to play with them? Let me tell you a secret. You wouldn't want to play against them. I mean, yes, they look legitimate, but they'll throw high every time. Now, they're odds I like. So let's play. Make your way to the left, through the archway, and to the display named Treasures Safe in the Soil. Here you'll see a spoon with an inscription. Measuring spoon. I belong to a good man. The inscription on the spoon says, the words following the curve down, touching the base before making their way back up. Grasp the handle and steady yourself. Do not let those old fears get the measure of you. For I have been to the depths. They are not nearly as shallow as this spoon, but seemingly bottomless. And the way down is not like this soft slope, but sudden and steep. And the way back is not a gentle incline, but a sheer face. I belong to a good man, and it belongs to you. And though this spoon is silver, I must not sell it for coin and trade those for my weakness. Remember, I belong to a good man, and a good man is what you must be. So heap your powder high, fill the depth of your spoon and the space in your soul with honest work. How strange for a man to be weighed by a spoon. Head right and onwards, past the Decline of Roman Canterbury curving wall and through the archaeology display. You'll come to the Hypocaust, the street-level display leading down to the baths. Our final poem also takes us underground, into a Mithraic temple, an important cult in the empire, favoured by soldiers and one with many rituals. Mithras, quick to save, quick to help. It is said that time is the devourer of things, but whoever said that had not seen British rain, which seems to do the job just as well. So when Prefect Gaius told me about Mithras, one yet again wet, miserable as Luctus camp night, I was ready to listen to anything to distract me from my damp tunic and damper boots. An intriguing god, this Mithras, and one I'd heard spoken about by the other lads. Something about it spoke to my heart, which I had thought hardened to such things, so I find myself here, underground and alone. The darkness is doubled as the blindfold is tightened, and this unfamiliar place becomes completely unknown to me, those quickly glimpsed altar carvings hidden in the low light, after images, a bull figure with coiled snakes flickering against my eyelids, half-formed impressions of half-understood icons. No matter, no need to understand at this moment. More pressing matters, like these fleshy, slimy cords bound around my wrists, the chicken gut shackles I've been told about, and I almost choke from the sensation and smell, but control myself in time. Thank you, Marcus, for the warning about those. I shuffle forward, sandals scraping against the floor, until it is indicated that I should stop. So I stop. No further, for I do not want to touch the tip of the sword the father is undoubtedly pointing at me. Today I enact death. I do not wish to become it. I smell incense, perfumed smoke drifting around me, and my eyes water, nose tickled. But I must not sneeze, or I will disturb the still air and the ritual happening around me. The masked assembly I saw before blindfolded begins to make sounds. A cacophony of animal noises. Raven and goat, horse and eagle, and the distinct clucking of a chicken. Undoubtedly Marcus, who said he'd do something unorthodox. With the roar of a lion, the father begins the catechism, and I respond with the words I've learnt. Language flowing through me like water from a rock, sudden and unexpected, miraculous yet right. The silence falls thick, impenetrable, and I can almost hear the roiling of incense, feel the smoky tendrils pull at my arms, wrap themselves around my body. So now I fall to the floor as if struck. As instructed, yes, but also from the unbearable weight, the silence of expectation on my shoulders. My blindfold slips and I see rays of light streaming through the altar, making the dark understandable. The mysteries somewhat clearer, though I am left with questions. Do I become the bull struck down by Mithras? By rising from the ground, am I suddenly rock-born? Or something else, hidden from my knowledge? No matter. The sudden chill of the stone brings me to my senses, and I remember. Today I join my brothers in arms. We have been united in battle, and now by handshake. Gaius says that Mithras is quick to save and quick to help. But salvation only comes to those who help themselves, I think. So if joining puts me in the prefect good books and hastens my promotion, well, there's a helpful thing too. That brings us to the end of this tour of the museum. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please do take your time and have a proper look around the museum. There are many fantastic artifacts and interesting stories to discover. I've been your poet, Dan Simpson, and thank you for joining me on this poetry tour of Canterbury Roman Museum.